This is Romney, reel 8.
You were telling me that
Well, yes, about the illnesses you wish to know which we had on our ship taking home. If anybody got a really bad attack of malignant malaria, and it might in 12 months' time, they would have one or two attacks of this fever. Allied to the depressive effect of looking at the same mountains, the same people, and the same food, because our food began to, what can you bet me? Food began to go off in quality and quantity, particularly after the great fire which practically finished Salonika. Now, my mother always swore that I had malaria there, but it would have been a very funny thing if I hadn't, because the mosquitoes are really dreadful.
Did you nurses take any precautions against malaria?
No, you can't. Not really, not then. No. And we had the cliff, we were right on a jetting arm, you see, field it was really, awful fields. And then a cliff down to the dirty water it was, that bit of the Mediterranean, because there were horses, a few ponies and the fishes. Awful. And the horses' dung would stay there, and the mosquitoes and flies would come in the camp. Yes. So, of course, our camp, being right on the edge of that, we got the flies. I've known that I'm jumping the gun a bit, because I'm getting as far as when I was in the tent. You'd open the tin of milk to put in your tea, and you'd have to take the cover off your mosquito netting, when there'd be bzzz, you see. Then you have to be quick. Or you'd be having flies in your tea. So there was that. But it was the, now I come to think about it, we got that we couldn't have potatoes. This is towards the end of my time in the tent. Not that we minded. I was very happy there, you see, enjoying myself. And we had rice. The meat, of course, was appalling. It was some dried-up stuff that had come in through some ship. But you must remember that, I want to give a lecture about this. Here is the sea, Mount Olympus, the great arm of what is now a very famous port of Salonika. And even in St. Paul's day in the Bible, you had that port. The town itself is surrounded by a beautiful wall which is exactly like the one in Conwy in North Wales. A sort of this way, turreted all round. And then keeping the city, but it was a city, a beautiful one. And beyond that, there wasn't a house. There wasn't a city, there wasn't a town, there was nothing. Our army were on the Struma Valley, as the general said to me last week. The Struma Valley was still been alive with these flies and things. And forgotten. How to get food up to the Struma Valley? There were no natives, no anything. And beyond the Struma Valley was Bulgaria. And Bulgaria was fighting us. Bulgaria was up above us. She'd only got to come straight through, and we were told quite calmly that we should have gone into the sea, because there were no ships to take us away. We were either that or taken prisoner, but there was nothing else for us.
How worried were you about that?
Not the slightest. No, as if I should. My favourite occupation. Because, of course, it was so innocent. Nice, you see. No responsibility in the matter. I mean, that's nice. Nice, friendly.
Mrs. Romney, could you tell me something more about the disease you called the Balkan tap? What were the symptoms?
Well, the symptom was a very acute depression. If we could, or as I have, Mrs. Brooks, described to you, the loneliness of the position, which practically was unchanged during the most part of the war, they looked upon, we call them the three pips, three pointed large mountains, an odd lake, Dwaram, where the fighting much was, and this valley. Some of them had been 2 years unable to go home and leave. Any leave they had, they said, no means of getting down into Salonika. And when they got into Salonika, it was very, you could get a bit of drink, but that was about all that you could get, and there was the sea. So that it was inevitable that some of these with families in England, without knowing at all what was going to happen to them. We had no news of the war in Europe, whatever, we had no newspapers half the time. Wouldn't you have begun to get that depressive thing, which in the end began to affect the mind? Then there was the blazing heat in August, so blazing that, of course, all our skins went wrong over that. I mean, we sometimes couldn't get water to wash. Then in the winter, you got that dreadful cold wind from the, we say it's from Siberia, and I'm quite sure it was. There's nothing to stop his coming straight down. That, of course, we had to bear all that. And the men in the line it was worse for, because some of them hadn't much cover. And they hadn't got so tremendous things in the way of clothes, neither had they so much in the way of medical supplies. We couldn't get anything into Salonika or the Balkans. Where could it come from? It wasn't going to come from Israel and the Suez and all those kind of places. Salonika is that little town going towards Turkey and the Dardanelles straight through to the Black Sea. Where were we going to get it from? Towards the inn, on the ship. We ate well, of course. They got the supplies in the place. You know, they'd stocked enough. Australia sent it absolutely full of food and meat and everything. And we got chefs and things. But when it came to what we had ashore, if one of the supply ships were sunk, torpedoed, where was our food coming from? Where was it? Because after the fire, there was no shop to give it to you either. And the shops were on the scanty side. They couldn't get their supplies from Greece or Turkey. They couldn't. We were short of food, obviously. And much more than that, as I've said, the heat was terrible. I used to, when it came to July and August, the worst of it, I'd be sitting, you see, the tents would be, here would be one big tent, I have told you, and another. Then the bell tent here for the sister and her assistant, and the little bell tent during the day.
Beside the tent that had the men.
Oh, yeah, quite alone. And then another big one and another big one, you see. Tent, tent, bell tent. Tent, tent. And the bell tents would be all in a row, about six of them. Then the things, the wards for the men. Well, this bell tent became so scorchingly hot that I see now that my health, I'm very healthy, man, that are people who can and can't. I used to go and pick up the brandy that belonged to the patients. They never had any brandy, and get a teaspoon, and I always had a teaspoonful of brandy at 1 o'clock. Because none of the natives ever were seen or worked. You never did in Salonika because it was so terrible. They just lay down wherever they were, you see, for an hour. Nobody moved. But we nurses had to carry on because, of course, as you know, that's the tradition.
And so I... Until the noonday sun.
Yes, yes. I took the brandy. I just took that for some weeks, a month at least. I took that deep from the brandy. When I had the bile duct and the gallbladder removed, the surgeon in the private room, of course, who was a friend of mine, said, "Here are your stones, Mrs. Ramley. And one of those, in my opinion, been carrying around with you from Salonika." Is that possible? I pulled a string to come home. That was easy. Very easy. I knew the old general in charge of the, you know, REMC. And my fingers began to swell. I noticed the swelling of the fingers, and the war was just about due to end. So I thought, well, if I go home, I shall miss all the parties. Naturally, then there'd be parties and rejoicing. We should get the food, so it would be quite different than what we'd be going through. So a doctor was on doing the lounge one day, And I said, no, doctor, what about these? So he said, well, Miss Collis, have you any influence? I said, well, I might say so. Then he said, go home. Go home. Well, you see, if I'd spent another winter enjoying myself, then dashed to do the job and in a tent, I'd have been very foolish, wouldn't it? I was very upset about it. There's a picture of me saying goodbye to them. They were all clustered round and giving me a hamper of food for the journey and the train right through, locked in, and urinated and threw it through the window. Locked in a carriage for safety with another sister.
Safety against what?
Men. Men, of course.
Who were there?
Well, there were all the, any kind of soldier or what have you, in the foreign men's and everything, the rest of the train. We had a little carriage, yes, right through to Itea and Brala in through Greece. And anyway. And the Itea and Brala, where, of course, is the... this is awful, it goes. I know so well the Adelphi for the Oracle.
Yes.
All that, you know, that's heaven to me. Because I probably lived in Greece once, former life. I know that. Well, so that was it. I came home. I never regretted it, because they all had a wonderful time. That there are times when I'm not, you see, he said, once you carried that round, well, probably the stone was what made the fingers swell. So it must have been in a bad state, you see. Though I looked thoroughly healthy, I was, because I was I came from a healthy family. We never had anything like, you know, asthma and things. But I just got that out there, I think, and the food and one thing and another.
How much did your parents know about what your life was like in Salonika?
Nothing. Nobody. The few letters we had were all censored, of course. I mean, ours were. And we practically very rarely got letters from home because they were sank. There's no means. We were the forgotten army. I didn't know we were called that until time. Well, of course, it was we're the forgotten army. And they felt that, and that really helped the Balkan tap. They felt they didn't know what their children and their people were doing. And then the incessant flies, like Egypt, when you're not... that inevitably they got this depression. Wouldn't you? There was no change whatever. There were no books to read. They had nothing. They even hadn't to shoot half the time until the Bulgarians thought they'd just heat up a bit, see how things were going.
As a nurse, what could you do for the men who were suffering from depression?
I used to just be smiling and cheerful. Smiling and cheerful. I told you about the one last time, didn't I, who thought he could see Almighty and he was going to sort of pull my leg and anybody else's, not do what he was told. But I managed him. I never had anybody tell me how to manage these men, but somehow I managed them all very well. They got quite a name, my sister and myself and our lines. Oh, well, the matron would say, oh, yes, she was a little old lady. She'd say, we're having trouble, matron, with some of that. Just send him round to Miss Collis and Miss So-and-so's line. I told you this when I went in the ward, and there he was with the red hair, all the flags of the Allies stuck on the top of his mosquito net, and cross legs sitting there with a cheeky look at me, saying, now I'm going to have some fun. I'll now tease the nurse when she comes to deal with the monitors, you see, every night and morning. He didn't reckon on me. I entered the tent and gave one glance like this. I knew which one it was, you see. So he started talking. He might have been talking to the air, you see. Not the slightest sign of hearing. Round I went. Of course, he began to feel quite silly. And I got to him. I looked at him. I said, oh, will you be quiet a minute? Are you going to have your temperature taken? Just tell me.